you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
I want you to imagine a nation in its golden age. It is a mecca of architecture, art, music, and literature. Its universities are full of philosophers, historians, and scientists, and the museums house wonders from around the world. This nation is in its golden age, but that is all about to end. A war like no other seen in history will murder a generation and leave its widows, grandfathers, and children in poverty. These stunned survivors use broken pianos as kindling to boil water. They're surrounded by marble and stone, yet all they know is hunger. This happened to the German nation in the early 20th century. They were going through their golden age when Beethoven, Wagner, Schubert, and Brahms were common names. But then came the meat grinder. 4 million German men and their allies were buried during the Great War. Another 8 million were wounded, many in horrible ways. Those whose minds were ruined by shell shock will never know. How many of these men would have become artists or scientists? What great music don't we have today because the composer was killed? What works of architecture would have been built in a German empire that never lost its youth? To take it a step further, what would the world look like had Kaiser Wilhelm II conquered his empire? An empire worthy of Caesar or Alexander? What heights of culture could the Romantic era have achieved if it had matured within an empire to rival any in history? This world, this alternate history, is where we are sending you today. Please put on your clothes while I finish your orientation. We're sending you to Berlin, 10 years after the Central Powers won the Imperial War, as they call it. You will be traveling as a rich American tourist, and you'll be pleased to know we've booked you a room at the world-famous Ludendorff Hotel in the heart of the city. As you know, we can't control when you'll return, so you may want to settle down someplace and wait out your stay. That's fine. However, I must warn you against getting involved in any kind of political activity. There are some friction points in the German Empire, and you could get yourself in trouble by mixing with the wrong people. A little common sense will go a long way. Well, you look great, very sharp with the stovepipe hat. Now, if you don't mind, please step onto the platform, and we'll get you on your way. You've been exploring the streets of Berlin for weeks. The city is vibrant, bustling at the seams. Theater, music, dance, cinema. The lights of the Wintergarten and the Volksbund reflect off the polished roofs of the Krupp and Ford streetcars. As the city sprawls out, the historic center towers to the sky. Neo-Gothic and Romantic palaces appear to touch the clouds, each one larger than the next, announcing the wealth of a flourishing aristocracy. You are enjoying your stay at the world-famous Ludendorff Hotel, named for the Kaiser's iron-fisted minister of war. Inspired by the Woolworth Building in New York, the Ludendorff stands 20 stories taller and resembles a temple to Wagner's mythology. The Ludendorff opens onto what's called the Kaiser Wilhelm Square, a monumental space dominated by a statue of a German soldier striving forward with rifle and bayonet raised high in a stance resembling one of the great statues of antiquity. Canteens in the square sell pretzels, sausages, and beer to the bustling crowd. The people are also fascinating. Far from the flappers of the 1920s in your world, the costumes here are much more conservative. The women are dressed in Victorian-inspired gowns with high necklines, V-tapered backs, and silk bustles flamboyantly drape over hoop cages. Their hair is decorated with the intricacy of Corinthian capitals, which they shade from the sun with broad hats and lace parasols. The men are dressed more severely in black and white and sport top hats and canes. Many style their mustaches with spiked edges like the Kaiser's. Your favorite coffee shop is in the Kaiser Wilhelm Square. It's a small, trendy French cafe which attracts an interesting mix of artists and students. You've made friends with some of the regulars, in particular a young pianist named Richard Stammer. He's an awkward young man with strong convictions, but a good heart. He's been selected to represent Germania at the Imperial Gala, an annual concert that features aspiring musicians from across the greater German Empire. And though he often sits alone, he is well respected by the other patrons. You order a coffee with a shot of cognac and walk over to Richard's table. "I just don't understand it," he says without meeting your eyes. "Why do they do it?" You look across the table at the paper he's reading. There's a picture of a blasted building, soldiers and paramedics scouting through the rubble. Next to the photo is a mugshot of a man with a thin mustache and a long scar running down his cheek. He's been in the paper before. "Another bombing?" you say. "Yes. Bouchard's trying to kill the Kaiser again. I just don't understand it. This is a great time to be alive. There's peace. Everyone is prosperous. The French might be a part of the German Empire, but they have autonomy. And what's more, us Germans are hungry for all things French. Look at this cafe. A French cafe in the heart of Berlin. There are opportunities here." "Well," you say, "you are right. There are opportunities. But maybe the French resistance gauges things differently." "What do you mean?" "Well, the French have a proud history, you know. And we're not erasing that. In fact, the Kaiser has made great efforts to encourage French culture. Take the gala, for instance. The French will be there." "You're right, of course. It's just that, well, imagine if the French won the Imperial War in 1915 instead of Germany. How would you feel if Paris ruled Berlin?" "Rule is not the correct word. France has its own autonomous government. Germany does not rule France." "Oh, come on. It's a puppet government. We all know that. And the army is German." "There are many French in the army, and many high-ranking French officers. There's even a French division." "Yes, and they answer to the Kaiser, not the President of France." "France has never been so prosperous. This is a golden age for all of us. And it's because we are united together as Europeans. It's time to shed our medieval hostilities and become a strong and united civilization. A girl walks into the cafe. She has black shoulder-length hair and cat's eyes. It's Richard's girlfriend, a mysterious French girl. She looks nervous when she sits at the table.
Simone, what's the matter? You look troubled.
There's no time, Simone says, looking over her shoulder just as two burly soldiers step in.
I have to beg you, Richard, please don't play at the gala on Friday.
What? Why not?
If I tell you, it will only endanger you. Richard, you can't trust anyone, not even the police. Just please promise me you won't play at that concert.
Are those soldiers walking over here?
Yes, there isn't much time. Richard.
Got you. The soldier grabs the girl's arm and pulls her back from the table. Richard stands in defiance.
What is this? Get your hands off her.
Richard, promise me the concert.
You and Richard follow the soldier's truck to the police station, a large old building with rough stone walls and smoky barred windows. Prisoners file out of the truck, ducking under the gray canvas roof. They're chained to one another in one long line. Simone steps out. She spots Richard and mouths the word, "Go," before disappearing into the station. When the soldiers have left, you and Richard enter the station. It's full, crammed with people. Sullen, lonely individuals are packed together with whole families, rich and poor, all waiting in snaking lines or sitting miserably on the floor. Richard approaches a police officer.
That last group that just entered, where are they?
The officer points a thumb over his shoulder. Secret Service, he says with a scowl. They're in Ludendorff's hands now. It's out of our jurisdiction. You walk over to the area he pointed at. A man with a trench coat and slick blonde hair, parted down the center, sits on a chair, smoking.
Excuse me, Richard says, approaching him. Your Secret Service?
The man looks at Richard and takes a long, slow drag from his cigarette.
That last group, did they come through here? My girlfriend, Simone, was in that group.
The agent exhales towards the floor and taps his cigarette.
No one here by that name, he says. I must insist. I saw her come in, and that officer said she came this way. Now please tell me where she is.
The agent rises from his chair to stand a full head taller than Richard. You can see the scarring from acne on his face, and notice a foundation powder that doesn't quite hide it. You are Richard Stammer, the pianist? Richard looks startled. If I see her, I will let you know. I'm looking forward to your concert. You spend the rest of the day with Richard in the police station's waiting room. As the sun begins to set, your stomach groans and you convince the distraught musician to join you for dinner.
I don't understand it, he says. Why was she arrested? What did she do?
How well do you know Simone?
We've been dating for a month.
And before that?
She came to one of my concerts.
With friends?
No, she's new to Berlin.
I see. French.
Yes, but that has nothing to do with anything. Being French does not make her a criminal.
Richard, you know nothing about her, and the Secret Service just arrested her. Is the Secret Service in the habit of arresting innocent people?
Nothing. I know enough about her that I can say with absolute certainty she is not part of the French resistance, if that's what you're implying. Now I have to get back to the station, if you'll excuse me.
Wait, I have an idea.
What is it?
Do you know where she lives?
Yes, of course.
Let's have a look around her place. Maybe we'll find a clue that can explain all this.
Like what?
I don't know. Maybe a diary or an address book? Who knows until we look? If we find something suspicious, something related to the resistance, then we'll know. If not, then I'm sure she's innocent, as you say.
I don't suspect her of anything. We're in love. Now, I have to get back to the police station. You don't have to join me.
Richard, wait. Why not let me do it, then? Just a quick look, for curiosity's sake.
Richard looks at you with agitation. Finally, he writes an address on a napkin.
If it satisfies you.
You take the trolley to the last stop, where the German neighborhoods end and the French begin. The French streets are muddy, uncobbled lanes pocked with rickety apartment buildings. Horse and cart replace the streetcars of the more opulent German neighborhoods. The people here sell clothes, tools, toys, and food on the street. You find Simone's apartment on the third story of a wooden tenement building. The door is unlocked. The single room appears to have been thoroughly searched already. Worse than searched, the mirror has been pulled from the wall, books have been ripped apart, a coat has had its seams torn open. Even the mattress has knife marks running down its length. However, when you pull the cabinet from the wall, a note falls to the ground. The note has the address of a florist and the name Bouchard. You enter the florist with the ding of a bell. There are tin pails with bouquets of flowers brimming to overflowing. A middle-aged woman with pruning shears and aprons stands at a table clipping stems.
Can I help you? She says with a smile. I'm from out of town, a tourist. I saw your shop filled with these beautiful flowers and couldn't help myself. Do you mind if I browse around for a few minutes?
By all means, she says and returns to her work.
A few moments pass and the bell rings again. A man in a trench coat and suitcase steps in and walks up to the woman.
I placed an order for two bouquets of daffodils, he says, a slight English accent.
Yes, they're in the back. Follow me, says the woman.
You quickly walk up to the door and put your ear to it. Bad timing, the door opens and you almost fall to the floor.
What were you doing down there? The woman says. Oh, nothing. Excuse me. I have to leave.
You step out into the street, a little embarrassed, but curious. You walk down the street and find a thin alley which leads you to the back door of the florist. Holding your breath, you check the door. It's locked. But there's a wooden fire escape leading up to a second-story window. There's no one in sight. You climb the stairs. You step through the second-story window into a bedroom. The floorboards creak and your heart pounds. The bedroom doors open onto a hall. There are voices down the stairs. One of them is the Englishman's.
You must understand that it has been very difficult for us to fund you. Public opinion in Britain has swung in favor of reconciliation with Germany. You can imagine the embarrassment it would cause the Prime Minister if it was discovered we were funding the French resistance while our nations are at peace.
Yes, I can see how it would be embarrassing to you.
Now, if you can only just finish this dirty business, we can help you. Think of it. Guns, money, intelligence, training.
Your assistance in our rebellion is appreciated.
What we need is a war. We can't lose sight of that. And the path to war is through Ludendorff.
Yes, I understand.
So what is your plan?
I have a man on the inside. Kaiser Wilhelm will be dead before tomorrow evening. You can count on that.
I sincerely hope so. We want nothing more than a free and open France, and this is unfortunately our last opportunity.
As the two men wrap up their conversation, you slip back into the bedroom and to the window. A man in a trench coat is standing at the foot of the fire escape. Your heart pounds in your ears. You step back into the hall and inch your way slowly down the inner staircase, holding your breath and trying not to make the floorboards creak. There's a light shining through an open door at the bottom of the stairs, a kitchen. Through the crack in the hinges, you see the Englishman. The other man has a black turtleneck sweater and has a long scar running down his cheek. Bouchard.
Hey, you!
Comes a gruff voice. You turn to see a man in a trench coat.
I was just...
The man grinds his teeth and reaches his hand inside his coat. You turn and run down the hall, bashing the door open that leads into the flower shop just as a bullet whizzes by your head. You run past the woman who looks stunned. Another man in a trench coat enters the shop just as you yank open the door. You unglamorously headbutt him in the chin and run into the streets. Gunshots fire behind you, and you zig and zag past carts and pedestrians running for cover. You run past streets and alleys, through tenement blocks and cramped passageways in the labyrinthine and claustrophobic mayhem that is the French Quarter. Finally, exhausted and panting, you step from the mud and onto the cobbles. There are street signs written in German, and there are modern cars. Well-dressed pedestrians fill the streets. You lean against a stone-faced building for a moment to catch your breath, dabbing at your forehead and neck with your handkerchief. A black car pulls up next to you, and the back door opens. Sitting in the seat is the agent with the blonde hair from the police department. "Get in," he says.
"Listen, I found Bouchard. I saw him with my own eyes. He lives, or works, at a flower shop in the French sector."
"Yes, I know," says the agent.
"You do? Do you know about the English spy? They're funding the French resistance, you know."
"Whatever it is you stumbled on, I already have information on it. As you can imagine, we've been working on this case for years. We have men on the inside."
"Then why don't you arrest him? You know where he is. He's planning another assassination attempt tomorrow."
"I think a better question is why you're getting involved. You're on a tourist visa, from what I understand. Why get mixed up in something like this? It will only get you killed, you know."
"I didn't mean to stumble into this. I was just trying to help my friend get some answers. You weren't exactly helpful at the police station."
"It's not my job to be helpful. It's my job to serve the German nation. Now, if you will take my advice, leave this city. Leave right away. Buy a train ticket and get out before you get yourself killed."
You catch a cab to the Berlin Conservatory, a giant palatial-sized building in the neo-romantic style. Its east wing is still under construction, and the linden trees running down its boulevard are only saplings. Richard has a corner suite in the finished west wing, a gorgeous room with thick molding shaped after the architraves of Greek temples. Palatial windows allow the sunset to pour in.
Richard sits at his grand piano, a bust of Bruckner on the case.
I have to leave Berlin, I'm afraid.
Oh yes? Why?
Believe it or not, I had a little run-in with Bouchard while in the French Quarter. His goon shot at me.
You shouldn't have gotten involved in this. You should have stayed away from the French Quarter.
Yes, I realize that now. But Richard, I did find something out. Something important.
He fumbles with his sheet music, his hand shaking.
The gala tomorrow. I believe Bouchard is planning to assassinate the Kaiser tomorrow at your gala. Richard, whether or not Simone is innocent, she was right. You can't play tomorrow.
Richard stuffs his music into his briefcase and accidentally closes the lid of the piano with a bang.
What's wrong? You don't look yourself.
It's nothing. Look, you should probably leave town. This has gotten dangerous for you. You haven't gone to the police, have you?
Actually, that agent we saw earlier, he picked me up in his car. I told him everything, and he said he already knows. I think they're laying a trap for Bouchard. I'm sure they'll get him this time.
Ah, well, that's good then. Now I should be off.
He turns and shakes your hand.
Listen, it was very nice to meet you. I wish you all the best in life. I really do.
Hey, it's not like we'll never meet again. Actually, why don't you come with me? I'm thinking of going down to Vienna.
I can't, really. Goodbye, and happy journeys.
It's late evening by the time you arrive at the Anhalter Bahnhof, a stately old 19th-century train station. It was the largest in the world when opened by Bismarck and the Kaiser Wilhelm I. It was destroyed in your world. You purchase your ticket to Vienna and hand your luggage over to a porter. Not 10 minutes pass before you see a familiar face on the tarmac. It's the English spy. It would make sense that he should be traveling, of course, but what puzzles you is that this train station services the south. Shouldn't he be traveling north to England? Curiosity gets the better of you. You follow him at some distance until he stops in a shadowy corner. You pick up a newspaper from a stand not far off and pretend to read. Eventually, your persistence pays off. A man in a trench coat approaches the Englishman, and they talk for a few quick moments. The Englishman slips him an envelope and then walks off. When the other man turns, you see his face. He's the blonde secret agent. The agent? He said he had connections in Bouchard's organization, but an English spy? You must go and speak to the police. To the police station. Just as the cabbie is about to pull out, the door opens and a man sits next to you. Looking for a ride? I have a car.
No, thank you.
This is not a question. He pulls out a pistol. My car is this way. The car launches into the streets. Speeds expertly through dark, narrow lanes, escaping the lights of a city that never sleeps. Over a bridge, and you are in an industrial sector. Factories with tall smokestacks are black silhouettes against the stars. The pavement grows rough under the tires, and potholes rattle the car. Through the darkness, you make out older factories where the homeless gather around fires. The car screeches to a halt in front of an old factory with broken windows. A group of men in trench coats stalk the moonlight. They carry machine guns. Get out, says the man behind you. He marches you into the factory. Only a few of the lamps in the factory are lit, and these illuminate old machines like hunched giants that died in battle. Your feet almost slip on something metal, bullet casings. You're taken into what was once a supervisor's office. A group of somber-looking men stand over a spread of papers on the desk. Bouchard stands in the middle. "Here's the guy," says your captor. The men look up.
"Are you sure this is the one?" Bouchard says.
"Yeah, I saw him at the flower shop. It's him, all right." Bouchard lifts his fists from the desk and stands at full height.
"Who do you work for?"
"I'm a tourist."
"Cut the crap. You work for someone, and I want to know who."
"The truth is, I'm a friend of Richard Stammer."
"Did Stammer put you up to this?
Did he ask you to spy on me?"
"No, Richard's girlfriend was arrested yesterday. I went to her place to look around, you know, to see if there was some clue as to why she was arrested. I found a note with the florist's address. It was the only thing I had, so I thought I'd check it out."
"And so you broke in?"
"I shouldn't have done that."
"You bet your life you shouldn't have done that."
"So you're a tourist, eh?"
"Here's his passport, boss."
"Hmm, I see. And you say you don't work for anyone?"
No, I'm just visiting Berlin. I made friends with Stammer at a coffee shop a few weeks ago."
"You in Berlin for business or pleasure?"
"Pleasure, I guess. I just came for a holiday."
All right. Get on with it. 3 bullets to the back of the neck. Oh, and that pesky girl as well. I don't want anything to screw up tomorrow."
Your captor leads you into the darkness, his meaty fingers tight around your collar. In a corner of the factory is Simone, illuminated by slivers of moonlight. She's tied to a chair with a rag in her mouth. Her short hair is wild on her head, and she looks exhausted. The man grabs the back of her chair and drags it on 2 legs. Simone squirms violently, and the chair flips to the ground.
"Fine," the man says, pausing for a moment to contemplate this awkward job. Then to you.
"Untie your wrists and legs. No funny stuff."
He jerks your collar and jams the gun into your back for emphasis. You untie Simone, and she stands defiantly in front of the man.
"All right, both of you, walk in front of me. I want your arms where I can..."
Simone's hand is a flash in the moonlight, and the man begins to gurgle, grasping at his neck. She lunges at him, and they wrestle and growl like raccoons on the floor. Eventually, the man goes limp. There's a clatter as Simone drops a shard of glass. She picks up the gun, and you both race into the night.
After what seems like an hour, running and dodging through dark streets, you and Simone hide in a dark doorway to catch your breath.
"How did Bouchard get you? I thought you were with the Secret Service."
"There's no time to explain. We have to get to the gala. We have to stop Richard."
"What do you mean?"
"He's the assassin. Richard is going to kill the Kaiser."
"What? That's impossible. He would never do that."
"Bouchard is blackmailing him. It was my life for the Kaiser's.
We have to get to that gala before he does it."
"Now just hold on a minute. How can I trust you? This is all very suspicious. You appear in Richard's life out of the blue, no friends, no past, and then you get picked up by the Secret Service?"
"So? They kidnapped me. What more do you want?"
"I want to know why you had a note with the address of Bouchard's flower shop."
"Fine, I'll tell you, if you must know. I came to Berlin from Paris, hoping to make a better life for myself. I was jobless and hungry and didn't have a place to stay. One of Bouchard's men gave me money, an apartment. He told me if I seduced Richard,
the money would keep coming. But I fell in love. We fell in love with each other. Bouchard's man kept pushing me. He wanted me to get a ticket to the gala. Then he wanted me to wear a bomb. That's when I ran.
And this whole blackmail thing, this is, what, Plan B?
Yes, exactly.
How will he do it?
There's a bomb in the piano. It'll be triggered by the highest note. When the Kaiser comes on stage to award the musicians, Richard will press the key. Now come on, we have to go.
The Imperial Colosseum is massive, almost double the size of the Colosseum at Rome. It dominates the skyline of this affluent Berlin neighborhood, like a wedding ring that's too large for an aristocratic finger. Like the Roman Colosseum, it's built from arches stacked one on top of the other. Unlike its Roman cousin, this building is dripping with Baroque ornaments, statuary, and marble. The most dramatic statuary is a giant scene built into the main entrance, complete with a fountain that reminds you of the Trevi Fountain at Rome. The statuary depicts the Valkyries taking a fallen hero to Valhalla, silent battle cries on their lips.
I thought it would be at a concert hall, not a Colosseum, you say.
Come on, Simone says, walking towards the building. There's no time for tourism.
Around the back are a series of loading bays where catering trucks are being unpacked by men and women in white uniforms. Simone approaches one of the workers.
Hi, we're late. Where can we change?
You have uniforms?
No, we're temp workers. Where can we find them?
There's a box in the back of the truck.
You and Simone quickly put on your uniforms and take a dolly into the Imperial Colosseum. You step into the main chamber. It's vast and full of spectators. The men and women in their formal wear look to you like black and white static as they mill about in their seats. The top aisles are hazy to the eye from the sheer distance. On stage are a group of folk dancers with costumed musicians sitting behind. What surprises you is the sound quality of the music. Even from this great height, the sound is crystal clear.
I believe this is Lithuania, judging by the flag over the stage.
She spots a program on the ground and picks it up.
It looks like we're into the eastern states.
We still have Poland, Russia, Ukraine, and Romania to go. Then it looks like France, Italy, the Netherlands, and finally, Germania. He'll be playing last, and then the Kaiser will present the awards. Poor Richard. He must be beside himself. I can't imagine playing a concert, knowing you have to kill yourself and your emperor at the end of it. Evening when Richard walks on stage and the crowd cheers. This is the finale, the climax of the gala. It's a celebration of German culture and achievement. You've moved as far forward as you can, and two big soldiers are blocking the lower level, which is reserved for the aristocracy and special guests from across the empire. Kaiser Wilhelm II sits with his wife and children in a decorative box. You also notice Ludendorff just to the right of him. Richard looks small from where you stand. You can't quite see the details on Richard's face, but he looks stiff and wipes his forehead with a handkerchief as he bows to the crowd. He shakes hands with the conductor and concertmaster and sits at the piano. At a nod from Richard, the conductor raises his arms and the music begins. The music starts with the sound of a lone horn making a military call. This is soon joined by the orchestra that rumbles in like medieval knights charging down a hill. This music is truly breathtaking, powerful, a true masterwork by the young German composer Felix Zeigler. A man who must have died during the First World War in your timeline. Why don't we just tell one of these soldiers? Surely they're not in on the plot. No. They'll take us to their commander, and who knows if we can trust him. We just don't know. Well, what can we possibly do? We can't send Richard a message. There must be over 100,000 people here, and the stadium is pretty dark, other than the stage. Yes, I know. We have to somehow get you in front of him. He has to see you. Quiet, I'm thinking. The music continues, and with each new pass of a phrase, each new movement, you grow more nervous. Your palms sweat. You pace back and forth, and you can feel your heart pound. You feel so nervous that you wonder if this is what it would feel like to be an assassin. The time ticking down, knowing it is about to happen, and that you must do it. But you don't have a plan. Simone has her eyes closed tight in concentration. Hopefully she comes up with something. Otherwise... The music ends and the crowd jumps from their seats, clapping, calling out bravo, cheering their hero. Richard rises from the bench, pushing himself up a little as though his knees were too weak to carry him. He bows and then motions his hand to the conductor and then to the concertmaster. The musicians from the other countries are then herded on stage, joining Richard in one long line. The Kaiser rises from his seat. A spotlight shines down on him. The crowd explodes with a passionate, almost hysterical applause as he opens his box and walks down the aisle. A highly decorated Imperial Guard escorts him onto the stage. An aide approaches with a wooden box, and the Kaiser begins to pull medals from it, which he pins on the nationals, one at a time. The sweat pours down your back. Richard is at the end of the line, on the far right. He keeps looking over at the piano in the center of the stage. "It's now or never," you say to Simone. She looks at you with eyes like glass. They're big and wet with tears. She swallows hard, closes her eyes, and takes a deep breath. Then she launches herself at the two soldiers. They are completely surprised and roll painfully down the steep cement stairs. Simone races down the stairs, calling out Richard's name. Even at this close distance, her voice is dampened by the sound of the crowd. Simone is only 100 meters away from the stage when she pulls out a gun, the gun she took from your captor back at the factory. She fires 3 rounds into the air. People around her scream, and there's a stampede to get away from her. The Imperial Guards on the stage pull ranks around the Kaiser to protect him. They lift their rifles to their shoulders, searching in the mass of dark shapes for an assassin. The Kaiser looks surprised, his hand still pinning a medal on a musician. Richard is walking towards the piano. "Richard!" yells Simone. Richard's body reacts, and he steps to the front of the stage, putting his hands over his brow to see better. "Richard!" she yells again.
Simone, is that you?
He calls out. The agent with the blonde hair leaps onto the stage and jogs towards Richard. He pushes Richard off the stage and you see him disappear into the darkness. The agent turns and marches to the piano. He turns on a heel, smartly salutes the Kaiser, and shouts the words, "For Germany." You watch in slow motion as he presses the key. There's a bright flash of light followed by a deafening bang. A shockwave slams you to the ground. A rain of splintered wood and body parts follow. You roll into a ball, covering the back of your neck for protection. Your ears are ringing when you look around. You see confused people, some of them wounded, wandering around a cloud of dust. There is a crater in the middle of the stage. Musicians who were receiving their awards, the Imperial Guard, the Kaiser, even the orchestra are gone. You race down the stairs. You find Simone curled up on the stairs, covered in dust and blood. At first, she's stunned and confused.
Are you okay? Have you been injured?
Your leg.
Richard! Help me. Let's go.
You pull Simone to her feet and put her arm around your shoulder. The closer you get to the stage, the more gruesome the injuries. At the bottom of the stairs is the edge of the stage, blown halfway over. And there, under it, is Richard. When he sees you and Simone, he springs up. He runs to you and gives you both a big hug. He kisses Simone and takes her from your arm. You step back to let the two lovers reunite. And you can't help but smile, even through the carnage. As you move away, you look up at the stage. Through the dust, you see a man with a bulldog frame climbing the ruined stairs. It's Ludendorff. As he stands there, on the stage, looking around at the chaos, his lips curl into a smile.
I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. If you enjoyed this show, you'll be happy to know that there is a bonus track for this episode. It picks up some time after the assassination. War is brewing between Germany and Britain. You join Richard Stammer in an elite and very modern paratrooper brigade. Here, have a listen to this sample.
It is late evening, and your plane is painted gold by the setting sun. An engine roars somewhere. You look down the airstrip at the rows of Junkers. There are hundreds of these large four-engine planes rolling through the grass, and the entire 1st Bavarian Royal Division of 20,000 men is lining up next to them. The men in your platoon, or Zug as it's called, are excitedly helping each other strap on parachutes, rifles, and bags. Many are painting their faces black. Despite the excited activity of the men, Richard Stammer seems to be in his own world. He's looking out to sea, across the English Channel. Your plane roars to life, and your lieutenant orders your Zug to file on the plane.
You can find this and many other shows in the store at twilighthistories.com. So if you want to support the show while also listening to more stories, please visit the store at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to the Twilight Histories with Jordan Harbour.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.